Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we're discussing Upheaval by Jared Diamond. Published in 2019, Upheaval investigates how several nations have navigated through substantial crises in modern history. Through meticulous examination of seven distinct countries, including Chile, Indonesia, Australia, and Germany, Diamond explores recurring challenges and strategies that have surfaced globally. His analysis helps us understand the complexity of national disasters and the pathways to recovery. Jared Diamond, a UCLA geography professor, is renowned for integrating ecology, history, biology, and anthropology in his research. An award-winning author, Diamond has received accolades such as the MacArthur Foundation Fellowship and the Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement. His earlier work, Guns, Germs, and Steel, was honored with the Pulitzer Prize, underscoring his profound impact on understanding human societies. Upheaval is a must-read for history enthusiasts, political science students, and anyone keen on global affairs, offering insightful perspectives on how nations face and overcome crises. Join us as we delve into the lessons and stories from this compelling study of national resilience and transformation. Upheaval, Turning Points for Nations in Crisis. Introduction, Navigating National Crises, Lessons from History's Pivotal Moments. Have you ever wondered how countries navigate through turbulent times? It turns out the strategies involved are not so different from the ones we use to solve personal dilemmas. The concept is called selective change, determining what's at the heart of the problem, deciding what needs to be altered, and what should remain intact. This approach is just as applicable if you are rethinking your career path in a personal crisis as it is for a nation recovering from political upheaval. In Upheaval, Jared Diamond explores this theme by examining the history of seven nations that faced monumental challenges during the modern era. Each of these countries had to confront their realities head-on, assume responsibility for their future, and creatively overcome their constraints to pave the way for progress. This summary delves into several compelling narratives. Learn how Finland used diplomatic prowess to address its conflict with Russia. Discover how Japan evolved from a feudal society to a leading industrial power. Understand how Australia's push towards independence was influenced by Britain's changing stance. These stories not only illustrate the power of selective change, but also demonstrate how nations, much like individuals, must accurately assess their situations and make calculated decisions to thrive amidst adversity. Part 1. Mastering Crises Through Strategic Changes. 12 Essential Factors for Resolution. As we age, personal crises inevitably surface, be it during the turbulence of adolescence, the questioning phase of midlife, or the reflective periods of retirement and old age. We all face challenges. These crises can explode suddenly, like a sudden breakup or the diagnosis of a serious illness, or they can build slowly as we stubbornly stick to outdated habits in an evolving world. When our current strategies no longer yield the desired results, it's clear, something's got to give. This principle rings true not just for individuals, but for entire nations. It's like watching technology outpace the infrastructure of a US city. Eventually, everything needs an upgrade. But what exactly should one do when faced with a crisis, be it personal or national? Jared Diamond proposes 12 critical factors that pave the way to overcoming these upheavals. 1. Recognize that a crisis exists. Denial is not just a river in Egypt, it's a barrier to progress. 2. Accept the responsibility to act. You can't change what you don't own up to. 3. Engage in selective change. Determine what must evolve and what must remain to preserve identity. 4. Seek help from others. External perspectives can offer invaluable insights. 5. Learn from others who have faced similar quandaries. 6. Embrace and understand your identity, whether as a person or a nation. 7. Conduct a truthful self-assessment. Honesty is your best ally. 8. Reflect on past crises and the responses to them. History often holds the key. 9. Practice patience. Not all solutions bring immediate results. 10. Remain flexible. Adaptability is a cornerstone of resilience. 11. Pinpoint your core values. They will guide your decisions. 12. Understand the limits within which you must work. Not everything is within your control. As we explore these factors, we'll delve into the histories of 7 nations, including Finland, Japan, Chile, Indonesia, Germany, Australia, and the US. Each offers its own unique lessons on tackling crisis. Starting with Finland, we'll uncover how these 12 factors were not just theoretical concepts, but practical tools that helped resolve genuine national crises. Part 2. Finland's geopolitical dilemma, a struggle for independence against Russian might. In the tumultuous years of the 1930s and 1940s, Finland found itself at the heart of a severe geopolitical crisis, heavily influenced by its strategic location and its imposing neighbor, Russia. The roots of this crisis trace back to historical shifts in sovereignty and shifting power dynamics in the region. Historically part of Sweden until 1809, Finland then fell under the Russian Empire as an autonomous Grand Duchy. However, the oppressive rule imposed by Tsar Nicholas II in 1894 stirred nationalist sentiments, propelling Finland towards independence in the wake of the 1917 Russian Revolution. Post-independence, Finland's transition into a liberal capitalist democracy set it starkly against the communist ideologies of Soviet Russia, laying the groundwork for future conflicts. The crisis deepened with the onset of World War II, when Joseph Stalin, fearing German expansion, sought to secure Soviet defenses by demanding military bases and transport rights through Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, and Finland, the buffer states between Germany and Russia. Finland, valuing its hard-won independence, was the sole country among them to reject Stalin's demands, a defiance that led to the Soviet invasion on November 30, 1939, marking the beginning of the Winter War. Outnumbered and outgunned, Finland faced formidable Soviet forces. Despite their limited military resources, relying on basic arms like rifles, machine guns, and improvised Molotov cocktails, the Finns employed guerrilla tactics effectively. They managed to inflict heavy casualties on the Soviet troops and minimized territorial losses, showcasing remarkable resistance despite their disadvantages. As World War II intensified, Finland's position became increasingly precarious. The continuation of Soviet bombings forced Finland into the role of co-belligerents with Germany, though distinctly not as allies. This nuanced stance included refusing Germany's demands to deport Finnish Jews and declining to assist in military operations against Leningrad, which inadvertently aided Soviet defense efforts against the Nazis, actions that would later influence post-war diplomatic relations. Despite these measures to maintain some autonomy, Finland's association with the Axis powers by the war's end left the country in a delicate position, facing the aftermath of its choices and the ongoing need to navigate its national crisis in a dramatically altered world landscape. Part 3. Finland's strategic response to post-war challenges shapes a new era in foreign relations. In the aftermath of World War II, Finland found itself nestled between the remnants of conflict and the daunting prospect of building a sustainable future. With its independence retained but heavily scarred by wars, Finland faced an immense national crisis that required deep introspection and strategic adjustments, particularly in its dealings with Russia, its formidable neighbor and former oppressor. The war's end came with a hefty price for Finland, reparations to the Soviet Union amounting to $300 million over 6 years. Despite the financial strain, this obligation inadvertently spurred significant economic and industrial growth in Finland. The need to generate substantial revenue led to accelerated industrial efforts, turning a severe financial burden into a catalyst for national development. Throughout the war, Finland's resilience had been remarkable, managing to maintain its sovereignty unlike many Eastern European countries that succumbed to Soviet control. This resilience was fueled by the spirit of its citizens, ready to sacrifice for their country's independence. As Winston Churchill famously remarked, "One should never let a good crisis go to waste," a principle that Finland embraced fully. The country's post-war recovery involved selective changes, a concept that resonated with many of the 12 factors outlined by the author. Central to these changes was the recalibration of foreign policy towards the Soviet Union. Acknowledging its geographical inevitabilities, Finland couldn't relocate away from the Russian border. Hence, a new approach to Soviet relations was imperative. Open, honest dialogues were initiated with Soviet officials, where Finland diplomatically addressed Russian concerns, which largely centered around security. By reassuring Russia of its non-threatening stance and committing to a peaceable coexistence, Finland hoped to establish a basis for mutual trust and cooperation. In a remarkable economic strategy, Finland not only managed to pay off its massive reparations, but also used this as an opportunity to boost its industrial sector and foster significant growth in trade. This economic upturn wasn't just beneficial on the domestic front. It positioned Finland as a crucial intermediary in East-West trade during the Cold War. Serving as a conduit helped Finland facilitate transactions between Russia and Western nations that were reluctant to trade directly with a communist state. However, in maintaining a favorable relationship with the Soviet Union, Finland practiced considerable self-censorship, keeping criticisms of the Soviets out of the public eye to prevent diplomatic friction. While this restraint in freedom of expression was a contentious compromise, it was one that enabled Finland to navigate post-war geopolitical complexities successfully. By transforming its approach to these challenges, Finland not only safeguarded its independence, but also laid the groundwork for a prosperous future, cementing its role as a peacekeeping bridge between the East and the West. This strategic maneuvering illustrates how, by adopting selective changes and recognizing the nuances of their situation, nations like Finland can turn crises into opportunities for transformative growth. Part 4. Opening the Gates. How Japan navigated crisis and embraced a new dawn during the Meiji era. The year was 1853, and as the United States expanded its territories to the West Coast, discovering vast gold reserves in California, it also heightened its presence in the Pacific. This expansion necessitated secure refueling stations for American ships along their trading routes, leading directly to a significant and imposing visit to the shores of Japan by U.S. Commodore Matthew C. Perry. On July 8, 1853, Perry arrived in Japan, bearing a set of demands from U.S. President Millard Fillmore, which included the opening of several Japanese ports to American vessels. The demands carried an implicit threat: comply by the time of Perry's return the following year, or face consequences. This bold ultimatum shook Japan, a nation long proud of its isolationist stance, having limited foreign influence for centuries. The Japanese leadership was initially resistant and deeply divided on how to respond. Perry's return in 1854 with an even larger fleet, this time wielding 9 warships, forced Japan's hand, leading to the opening of 2 ports to the Americans. This decision, made under duress, ignited a sense of crisis within Japan. The agreement, seen as dishonorable and one-sided, sparked a fierce debate among the Japanese leaders. However, a recognition was also dawning among many that isolation could not be sustained in an increasingly interconnected, modernizing world. With the US setting a precedent, other Western powers, such as Britain, Russia, and the Netherlands, promptly pressured Japan for similar concessions. confronted with the reality of their military disadvantage and the inevitability of global engagement, Japanese leadership realized that the only path forward was through modernization. The prospect of enhancing Japan's military capability and transforming its economic structures became a rallying point for future reforms. The culmination of these tensions and ambitions led to a significant power shift in 1868. Fueled by conflicting views on foreign interaction, a coup d'état ushered in the Meiji era, named after the new emperor. This period marked a profound transformation in Japan. The feudal system was dismantled, and sweeping modernizations were introduced in industrial, military, and educational sectors. This drastic turn towards modernization did not come without its internal conflicts. Traditional samurai, among others, viewed any cooperation with foreigners and reformists as treacherous, leading to internal strife and violence. Despite these challenges, the Meiji Restoration, as it came to be known, fundamentally altered Japan's trajectory. It transitioned Japan from a closed feudal state into a burgeoning empire on the world stage, poised to earn the respect and recognition it sought amongst the great powers of the time. Part 5. How Meiji-era Japan balanced tradition and transformation to emerge as a global power. The ushering in of the Meiji era following the 1868 coup marked a pivotal turning point for Japan. Faced with the reality of their geographical vulnerability as an island nation and the unstoppable tide of global trade and interaction, the new Japanese leadership made a pragmatic assessment. Isolation was no longer viable. Recognizing and accepting their situation was a crucial first step in addressing their national crisis. Japan was perceived globally as antiquated, lacking significant military presence or influence. Determined to change this perception, Japanese leaders embarked on a journey of selective yet profound changes aimed at catapulting Japan onto the world stage as a formidable power. One of the strategic moves by Japan involved looking outward and learning from Western advancements. This included sending students to study in Western institutions to absorb new knowledge and practices in military, governance, and law. The Japanese modeled their naval forces after Britain's Royal Navy, which was considered the most powerful at the time, and their army on Germany's disciplined military structure. This knowledge transfer was pivotal in Japan's transformation from a feudal society into a modern state governed by law and structured governance. In revamping its military and governance, Japan opened governmental positions to those educated in the West, shifting from a hereditary hierarchical structure to one based on merit and education. This democratization of opportunity was a significant move away from the ingrained feudal system, setting a foundation for broader societal transformation. Despite these extensive reforms, Japan remained deeply rooted in its cultural traditions. The transformation wasn't about westernization per se, but about adaptation and integration. Japanese leaders skillfully blended Western technological and institutional advancements with traditional Japanese customs and values. This approach ensured that while the nation modernized externally, it retained its cultural identity and ethos internally. The selective changes implemented during the Meiji era didn't only involve external adaptations, but also ingrained patience in their strategy. Japanese leaders were aware that such monumental reforms would not yield immediate results. It was this strategic patience that bore fruit when Japan, now a robust military power, stunningly defeated Russia in the Battle of Tsushima Strait between 1904 and 1905. This victory wasn't just a military triumph. It was a declaration to the world that Japan had arrived as a respected and formidable global power, successfully balancing the delicate act of modernizing while preserving its unique cultural heritage. Part 6. The Descent into Dictatorship, Chile's Political Upheaval, and the 1973 Coup. Chile, once known for its stable democracy and balanced political ecosystem, experienced a dramatic shift in 1973 that steered the South American nation into dictatorship. This shocking transformation traces back to a series of increasingly polarized political events that began much earlier in the country's history. Since 1925, Chile had employed a voting system that effectively maintained a political equilibrium, preventing any single party from dominating the government. This system supported three main parties, left-wing, right-wing, and centrist, each holding a piece of political influence without overshadowing the others. The stability was disrupted in 1970 when the centrist candidate, Salvador Allende, won the presidency with a mere 36% of the vote. His narrow victory was unsettling for both the right-wing and the left-wing factions, setting the stage for heightened political tensions. The strain intensified when Allende, adopting a Marxist approach, decided to nationalize the Chilean copper mines, a move that not only alienated U.S. investors, who lost a substantial 49% stake in these enterprises, but also led to significant economic backlash within Chile. Allende's reforms resulted in severe economic challenges, including worker strikes, escalating inflation, and a rapid decline in foreign aid. The growing discontent was such that Allende was seldom seen without armed bodyguards for protection. During a state visit, Fidel Castro, the Marxist leader of Cuba, even presented Allende with a gold-plated machine gun, a symbol that became ominously significant in the events that followed. As the political atmosphere soured, violent outbreaks and right-wing protests surged throughout the streets of Chile, signaling the brewing storm of a coup. The tense anticipation of a military takeover materialized on September 11, 1973, when a junta, led by high-ranking officials within the Chilean army, executed a violent coup. In a tragic turn of events during the coup, President Allende committed suicide using the gold-plated machine gun gifted by Castro. In the aftermath, the junta unleashed a brutal campaign against left-leaning individuals, capturing thousands, including the renowned folk singer Victor Jara. These prisoners endured severe torture before many were killed. Jara's mutilated body, shot 44 times, was later discovered in a canal, a grim emblem of the junta's ruthlessness. Initially, the junta proposed a shared leadership among several military generals, but General Augusto Pinochet, one of the junta leaders, swiftly maneuvered to consolidate power exclusively for himself, ensuring long-term control and marking the beginning of a harsh dictatorship era in Chile. This period in Chilean history is a stark reminder of how quickly a nation's democratic foundations can be undermined, leading to profound and painful national upheaval. Part 7: Chile's Economic Paradox. Prosperity under Pinochet's repressive regime. Before assuming control, Augusto Pinochet was perceived by many as mild-mannered and trustworthy, a perception that likely influenced his selection as the leader of Chile's junta following the 1973 coup. However, the reality of his regime quickly belied these initial impressions. Pinochet's rule commenced with extreme violence, including the infamous Caravan of Death, where a directive from Pinochet sent squads city to city to eliminate political opposition. As Pinochet stifled political activities, secret detention centers sprang up, and the regime resorted to increasingly brutal torture techniques. During these years, thousands of Chileans disappeared, their fates unknown, leaving a dark stain on Chile's history. Contrary to the oppressive political climate, elements of the Chilean economy began to experience an upturn. Many from the middle class and those with right-leaning ideologies viewed Pinochet's economic reforms favorably, despite the harsh political repression. Starting around 1975, Pinochet entrusted the nation's economic policy to the Chicago Boys, a group of economists trained at the University of Chicago, who were staunch proponents of free market principles. Under the guidance of the Chicago Boys, significant changes were implemented. The nationalized copper mines were privatized again. Foreign investments were encouraged. regulatory frameworks were loosened, and inflation drastically decreased from 600% to just 9%. The economy saw an average growth of about 10% annually. Nonetheless, these economic successes came with their own set of issues, particularly an increasing wealth disparity. The rich grew richer, while the poor faced worsening conditions. In 1989, a united front of political parties, known collectively as the No Campaign, successfully ousted an aging Pinochet from power. However, his influence lingered. Before stepping down, Pinochet secured himself a position as senator for life and amended the constitution to ensure continued military and right-wing influence, regardless of subsequent leadership. Post-Pinochet, Chile continued to prosper economically. The nation forged more free trade agreements, including with European Union countries and the United States, and boasted some of the world's lowest import tariffs by 2007. Poverty levels also improved dramatically, dropping from 24% during Pinochet's era to just 5% later on. Chile's journey through this period highlights the complex interplay between political and economic dynamics. It serves as a stark reminder of how a nation can experience economic growth under autocratic rule while grappling with significant human rights abuses. The Chilean experience underscores the importance of balancing economic reforms with equitable governance to ensure that prosperity is shared by all sectors of society. Part 8. Indonesia's tumultuous journey to forge a national identity amidst diversity and crisis. Indonesia's narrative as a nation is as vast and complex as its geography, stretching over 3,400 miles and encompassing an incredibly diverse population. Home to 700 different languages and a rich mosaic of religious beliefs, including Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Christianity, Indonesia's path to forging a unified national identity has been anything but straightforward. The seeds of Indonesian independence were sown around 1910, amidst centuries of colonial entanglements with Portuguese, British, and Dutch powers. This burgeoning independence movement culminated in 1945, when Indonesia declared its independence. However, the transition that followed was marred by political upheaval and internal conflict. In the early years, Indonesia was led by its founding president, Sukarno, who introduced a system he termed guided democracy. Under Sukarno's rule, though, the presidency leaned towards a lifelong tenure, and he kept the nation isolated from Western influence. This approach set the stage for a significant crisis in 1965, when a faction within the army, sympathetic to communist ideologies, targeted several military generals, accusing them of corruption and plotting against the government. The aftermath was brutal. 6 of the 7 targeted generals were killed, and the incident was blamed on communists, which some suspect was a pretext used by the army to purge communist elements from Indonesia. This led to a harrowing period where between 500,000 and 2 million people were killed in a series of massacres orchestrated by the military. As the dust settled, power shifted from Sukarno to Suharto, a military leader who steered the country in a dramatically different direction. Sukarno's policies had strained relations with the West and severely devalued the Indonesian currency. In contrast, Suharto, who officially took over in 1968, realigned Indonesia with the United Nations and Western powers, seeking to stabilize the economy and attract foreign investment. Suharto's economic strategies were influenced by the Berkeley Mafia, a group of economists trained at the University of California, Berkeley. Under their guidance, the regime managed to balance the national budget, reduce debt, and curb inflation, all while leveraging Indonesia's rich natural resources to boost foreign trade and investment. The Indonesian experience, similar to Chile's under Pinochet, illustrates the complex interplay between autocracy and economic reform. Although Suharto's regime was marked by significant corruption, it also implemented critical economic policies that helped stabilize the nation. Indonesia's history emphasizes the challenges of uniting a diverse population under a single national identity, particularly in a setting where democratic processes are compromised. Yet it also highlights how strategic changes and external influences can guide a nation through crisis. Part 9. Rebuilding and Reconciling. West Germany's Transformative Post-War Recovery. In the aftermath of World War II, Germany was a nation in ruins, physically divided and burdened by the heavy legacy of war. By 1949, the division crystallized with the establishment of the German Democratic Republic in the East, a state many regarded as a misnomer for its lack of democratic principles, mirroring the disillusionment surrounding the Democratic People's Republic of Korea today. The emigration from East to West Germany was significant until the Berlin Wall, erected in 1961, stifled the flow of escapees seeking freedom and better opportunities. The initial rationale behind Germany's division was a preventative measure against future militarization that could spark another war. However, as the 1950s dawned, perceptions shifted in the West. The burgeoning threat was no longer seen as Germany, but the Soviet Union. Western nations recognized the necessity of a robust West Germany as a counterbalance to Soviet power. Consequently, West Germany was incorporated into the Marshall Plan, an American initiative that pumped resources into European nations devastated by the war to revitalize their economies. Economic reforms in West Germany rapidly followed, marked by the introduction of the Deutsche Mark and integration into the free market system. The social and political landscape began to transform significantly under the leadership of Willy Brandt, West Germany's first left-wing chancellor, who took office in 1969. Brandt initiated a series of progressive reforms aimed at enhancing women's rights and reducing authoritarian tendencies within the government. Perhaps Brandt's most groundbreaking move was his diplomatic outreach to Poland and other Eastern Bloc nations. In an unprecedented gesture of reconciliation, Brandt sought forgiveness for past aggressions, a move emblematic of his commitment to healing and rebuilding relationships divided by the Cold War's stark ideologies. This act of seeking forgiveness was not only politically astute, but profoundly sincere, resonating deeply on an international stage. West Germany's journey through the latter half of the 20th century illustrates the potent impact of selective changes, grounded in honest self-assessment and a readiness to embrace external support. The policies and attitudes adopted during the 1960s and 1970s laid the groundwork for Germany's eventual reunification in 1989, showcasing the power of patience, flexibility, and diplomatic prowess. This period in German history underscores the importance of confronting past mistakes, the transformative power of apology, and the vital role of external support in national recovery. Part 10. Australia's journey to redefine its national identity post-World War II. In the wake of World War II, Australia found itself in a unique sort of crisis, stemming from its evolving relationship with Great Britain, the very nation that colonized it in the 18th century. Historically, Australia had a complex, dependent relationship with Britain, which played a parental role in its affairs. However, the 1950s marked a significant shift when Britain reduced its military presence and began to disengage economically, choosing to develop closer ties with mainland Europe instead. This distancing was a critical blow to Australia, effectively leaving it to fend for itself and sparking a crisis of identity and self-sufficiency. Decades later, the sentiment of abandonment still resonates with some Australians, reflecting the depth of this transitional challenge. Australia's response to this unfolding crisis was not immediate. For years, national identity was narrowly defined, characterized by policies such as the White Australia policy advocated by post-war immigration minister Arthur Calwell. This policy promoted a racially homogeneous society until the early 1970s, when pivotal changes began to reshape the Australian societal landscape. The election of the Labour Party in 1972, led by Prime Minister Gough Whitlam, marked a turning point. Whitlam implemented a series of reforms that significantly transformed Australia's domestic and foreign policies. These included the end of the White Australia policy, dismantling the remnants of British colonial influence, improving relations with neighbouring Asian countries, and enhancing the rights and services for Aboriginal communities. These reforms were driven by a realistic assessment of Australia's new circumstances and acknowledged the need for a more inclusive and autonomous national identity. Whitlam's reforms were underpinned by the idea of recognising existing realities, a crucial step in redefining Australia's place in the world. One of the symbolic milestones of this transformation came in 1999, when Australia's High Court officially recognised Britain as a foreign country, although it retained the British monarch as a symbolic element of its constitutional structure. As Australia navigated through its identity crisis, it also cultivated new international relationships, notably with the United States, which provided military support and helped establish Australia as a significant presence in the Pacific region. Moreover, Australia began to carve out a distinctive cultural identity, developing its wine industry and unique cuisine, which have both gained international acclaim. Through selective changes and embracing its diverse possibilities, Australia not only overcame its post-war crisis, but also emerged as a vibrant, self-reliant, and respected global player, demonstrating the transformative power of redefining national identity in response to changing global dynamics. Part 11, Reflections on Democracy, Challenges and Compromises in the US System. As we explore global histories, the current state of democracy in the United States presents an interesting lens through which to view the balance of freedom and governance. Drawing parallels with countries like Chile, where political compromise faltered and led to authoritarian rule, we find crucial lessons that may inform American democracy today. While stark differences exist between these nations, the vulnerability of democratic tenets in any country should not be underestimated. One fundamental principle underpinning democracy is the right to vote, an area where the US has a checkered history. Despite significant advancements like the women's suffrage movement in the 1920s, and the civil rights movement in the 1960s, which sought to eradicate racial discrimination at the polls, challenges persist. Modern legislative practices, such as voter ID laws, have imposed new barriers. In places like Texas, for example, the logistical hurdles to obtain a valid photo ID necessary for voting can be daunting, especially for those in economically disadvantaged situations. Beyond voting itself, the influence of money in US politics has reached unprecedented levels. Campaign finances have escalated to the point where elections resemble high-stakes financial battles rather than democratic discussions on policy and leadership. Such conditions favor candidates who can attract wealthy donors, potentially sidelining issues important to the average voter and contributing to a general disillusionment with the political process. Additionally, the current political climate in the US is marked by rising extremism and a stark unwillingness to compromise, reminiscent of the early signs of democratic backsliding seen in other nations. This inflexible attitude was notably evident during President Obama's tenure, where legislative gridlock often stemmed from a deliberate strategy by opponents to block initiatives, regardless of their potential public benefit. For the US to navigate these democratic challenges effectively, it could benefit from adopting strategies similar to those employed by nations that have faced similar issues. Acknowledging the problems openly, accepting responsibility for democratic erosion, and implementing selective changes could be vital steps forward. Potential reforms might include overhauling campaign finance laws to reduce the influence of big money or eliminating restrictive voting laws to ensure broader voter participation. Like other nations that have confronted threats to their democratic systems, the US stands at a crossroads where the path chosen could redefine its democratic heritage and its future political landscape. Part 12, Global crises demand collective action, the path to a sustainable future. As individual nations navigate through economic and political challenges, a broader perspective reveals that some of the most critical crises we face are global in nature. The interconnectedness of modern economies and societies underscores the importance of a unified approach to issues like climate change, resource depletion, nuclear proliferation, and socioeconomic disparities. Climate change stands out as perhaps the most daunting challenge, driven significantly by the relentless increase in CO2 emissions. This phenomenon exacerbates the greenhouse effect, where solar energy, trapped by these emissions, leads to a rise in global temperatures. The consequences are far-reaching. Melting Arctic permafrost releases methane, another potent greenhouse gas, while increased oceanic temperatures lead to acidification, devastating coral reefs that play crucial roles in marine ecosystems and coastal protection. The human impact on the environment extends beyond emissions. Our consumption patterns, exemplified by practices in fishing, oil extraction, and deforestation, have led to a rapid depletion of vital natural resources. The oceans, a critical source of protein for billions, are particularly vulnerable. These actions not only jeopardize marine life, but also threaten the very fabric of communities that depend on these resources for sustenance and economic activity. A reconsideration of consumption habits presents a tangible starting point for addressing these challenges. For example, if Americans were to emulate Western Europeans in cutting per capita oil consumption, which is currently double that of Europe without a corresponding increase in quality of life, a significant reduction in environmental impact could be achieved without sacrificing living standards. However, individual and localized efforts alone are insufficient to steer the planet away from impending ecological and social crises. International cooperation and commitment to agreements like the Paris Agreement are crucial. Such global initiatives represent collective acknowledgement of the problems at hand and a shared responsibility to implement selective, sustainable changes. In essence, the global community must come together, recognizing that these are not isolated issues, but rather shared challenges that demand a cohesive and dedicated response. Only through collective action and international collaboration can we hope to address these pressing concerns effectively and secure a sustainable future for generations to come. Final summary. Crisis, whether personal or national, is an unavoidable aspect of existence. Yet it is not the crisis itself, but how we respond to it that defines the trajectory of future growth and stability. History offers numerous insights into the dynamics of crisis management, underlining that enduring and constructive change often stems from a blend of honest self-evaluation and proactive responsibility. In the narratives we've explored, from Finland's diplomatic strategies to Chile's economic reforms under authoritarian rule, the principles of recognizing reality, admitting accountability, and making selective changes emerge as central themes. These principles apply universally, transcending individual and collective experiences to suggest a blueprint for handling challenges effectively. As we advance in an increasingly globalized world, the scope of these principles expands from individual nations to the entire human race. The interconnected nature of modern challenges, such as climate change, resource depletion, and social inequities, demands a unified approach. It requires us to act not solely within our borders, but as part of a global community committed to sustainable and inclusive solutions. The path towards these solutions is complex and fraught with difficulties. However, history teaches us that transformative change is possible with collective effort and perseverance. By drawing on our shared experiences and the lessons of the past, we can navigate the uncertainties of the future with greater confidence and hope. As we move forward, let us embrace the opportunity to shape a world that reflects our highest aspirations, recognizing that every crisis holds the potential for renewal and growth. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.